ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। हरे कृष्ण। सो वी आर टेकिंग आवर रीडिंग दिस मॉर्निंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम सिक्स कांटो चैप्टर वन द हिस्ट्री ऑफ द लाइफ ऑफ अजामिल टेक्स्ट नंबर 51। प्लीज लेट्स रिपीट रेस्पॉन्सिबली। तद तदिता सुदसकलम लिंगाम शक्ति त्रयाम महा दाते नु सांस्रितं पुंसे आससोका बयातिदाम। तान एन एक्सप्लेनेशन बाय डिवाइन ग्रेस सी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद महाराज की। द सबटल बॉडी इज एंडाउड विथ 16 पार्ट्स, द फाइव नॉलेज अक्वायरिंग सेंसेस, the five working senses, the five objects of sense gratification, and the mind. This subtle body is an effect of the three modes of material nature, which is composed of insurmountable strong desires, and therefore it causes the living entity to transmigrate from one body to another in human life, animal life, and life as a demigod. When the living entity gets the body of a demigod, he is certainly very jubilant. When he gets a human body, he is always in lamentation. And when he gets the body of an animal, he is always afraid. In all conditions, however, he is actually miserable. His miserable condition is called samsriti or transmigration in material life. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The sum and substance of material conditional life is explained in this verse. The living entity, the 17th element, is struggling alone life after life. This struggle is called samsriti or material conditional life. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that the force of material nature is insurmountably strong. Devi hi esa guna mai mama maya duratyaya. Material nature harasses the living entity in different bodies. But if the living entity surrenders unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he becomes free from his entanglement, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Mam eva ye prapadyante mayam etam tarantite. Thus his life becomes successful. The subtle body is endowed with 16 parts, the five knowledge acquiring senses, the five working senses, the five objects of sense gratification, and the mind. Pertain to today has a lot of input in our lives. In one concept, it could be connoted as being therapeutic. Why? It is medicinal. If you can understand it and apply it, then automatically it gives you some healing effect. That is why it's called therapy. It's therapeutic. Everybody knows in the medical field that when somebody has high fever, if you have high fever, it's more like a disc jockey, a DJ. He raps all kind of nonsense from his mouth. He says so many things, but in the end, they have no meaning. So in the material life, the bewildered conditioned living entity, Krishna mentions in Bhagavad Gita, says, Prakriti kriya manani guna kamani sava saha. Ahankara vimudatma kataham itimamiyate. The bewildered, conditioned living entity. See his situation. He's bewildered, he's conditioned, but he's living entity. That is his original identity. He thinks himself the doer of activity. He thinks. That is what I said, a DJ is rapping. But in the end, those statements have no significance, because it will not solve his problem. Because activities actually are conducted by the three modes of material nature under the supervision of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Brahma Samhita, it is mentioned, Srishti Siti Pralaya Sadhana Shakti Eka Chaye Vayasya Banani Vivati Durga Ichani Rupam Abhyasya Chache Statesa Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bajami. that Durga is conducting her activities. She's not independent also. She's acting under strict supervision and allegiance to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sometimes people think Durga is not a well-wisher. They think she already sets up and she wishes us evil. But in the end, she is doing her perfect devotional service. Why? Because she's submissive, she's surrendered, and she's acting only according to direction. So her activities are perfect. Now, when the bewildered living entity professes himself the doer, and he finds out that after all his strategizing, after all his brainstorming sessions, all his intellectual gymnastics, he finds himself in a miserable situation. Then what happens? He has to have a rethink. What should be the solution? Or what is actually the problem? In his state of rethinking, he makes attempt to make inquiries. He makes some consultation. And you see, in this consultative forum, we have seen in many aspects of Bhagavatam this going on. In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13 specifically, Arjun was speaking with Lord Krishna and making certain inquiries from him, asking about the field of activity. Because this conditioned living entity is stuck up in this field of activity. The field of activity is made for a purpose, but he's involving in the field with a wrong objective, so he gets the wrong results. The purpose of the field of activity is to enhance the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the master of the senses, Rishikesh. But when the living entity enters the field of activity and usurps the position of the enjoyer, he accumulates unlimited misery for himself in this life and for future lives, and then he finds himself evolving in a vicious circle of material miserable life. When you say vicious circle, it is difficult to break. It goes on and on and on. But somehow or the other, even in that vicious situation, he has some attempt to ameliorate his suffering, but the solution is not in his hands. So Arjuna had inquired from Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita and was asking, what actually is the situation of the field of activity? Who is the enjoyer? What is nature? What is consciousness? He wanted to find out. And Krishna took time. Actually, this is called analytical studies, Sankhya philosophy. If we have to deal with that subject matter, maybe we'll not live here even in 2 years' time. Because it's so elaborate, it's a broad spectrum issue. Lord Kapila, in the Srimad Bhagavatam also, was discussing with his mother, and the same subject matter came up. Because the mother was apprehensive of him leaving her, she took advantage and asked certain questions from Lord Kapila. And he mentions in that Bhagavatam, Devahuti Uvacha, Prakrite Purusha Siapi, Lakshanam Purushottama, Bruhi Karayana Asya, Sade Asacha, Yadatma Kam. Devahuti said, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, kindly explain the characteristics of the Supreme Person and his energies, for both of these are the cause of the manifestation of the manifested and the unmanifested. The cause. And Lord Kapila mentioned, Si Bhagwan Vacha, Yata Trigunam Avyaktam, Nityam Sat Asadatmakam, Pradam Prakritim Prahu, Avisesam Visesavat. The Supreme Personality of God has said, the unmanifested eternal combination of the three modes is the cause of the manifested state and is called Pradhan. It is called Prakriti when in the manifested state of existence. So the first thing that you see The living entity makes attempt to ameliorate, but it might not have the right approach. So Krishna gave a recommendation in Bhagavad Gita how to go about it. If you're in difficulty, there's a sadachar, how to go about it. He said, Tadvidi, Pranipatena, Pranipasena, Sevaya, Upadeshanti Te Jnana, Jnanina Tatva Dakshina. That just try to learn the truth by approaching a bona fide spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively, render services unto him. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you because he has seen the truth. That is the attitude. So in course of our practicing our Krishna consciousness and our spiritual chase for devotional life, we must imbibe these characteristics. Because Rupa Goswami had mentioned, there are six principles that are essential for you to make progress in spiritual life. You cannot avoid it. There are also six things that will destroy your spiritual life. So if following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas is one of the conditions of progress, it behooves that we heed this clarion call. And then in another aspect, it was mentioning that the living entity, when he is in the material conception of life, he thinks, he functions in particular attitude. You can take a baby for instance. When a child is growing, the first thing he cultivates is consciousness of the stomach. That is called anamoy. And you find out the little children, they eat like pigs. Anytime there is food, he just has to make sure he gets sufficient quota, because life is only meant for eating. Isn't it? Take a close look at children. They eat like anything. Whenever they find food, they just eat and eat and eat, non-stopping. But sometimes, when you have too many people taking care of a baby, the baby starves because they think in his baby attitude of anamoy, he eats everywhere. And so this person will not give, this person will not give, this person will not give. They presume he has eaten. And so the baby starves. But the baby attitude is that he wants to eat. So our basic attitude when we are in material conception is that we want to fulfill the basic, you know, childish needs of eating, then sleeping, and then crying when there is some inconvenience for our parents to come. But in our mature stage, we make arrangement for our defense, and we also make facilitation for our sex involvement. So basically, we live like animals. Animals, they eat, they sleep, they mate, they defend. But human life is actually meant for a higher objective than this. And when that living entity makes a little more evolution, after understanding that he is not limited to the stomach needs, he starts thinking, okay, other than this, my eating attitude and sleeping, there's more to it. I should find out. So he advances to the next stage, which is the stage of Jnanamoy. And, Pranamoy. That the life is actually sustained by certain essential ingredients. You find that you are breathing, and when your breathing is not proper, you are suffocating and you think, maybe I will die. Beyond that state of Pranamoy is Jnanamoy. When he starts thinking in terms of his thinking, his willing, his feeling, and his dispositions, how he can utilize them properly. So he makes further inquiries. And then, Vijnanamoy. But over and above all of this is the original nature that is a partaker of, which is the nature of God. God is described in the Vedas as Anandamaya-vyasat. It's Anandamaya-vyasat. Means his pleasure are continuously on the increase. And he has adequate facility to expand them unlimitedly. But the condition living entities approach for pleasure is very limited. And so when he exhausts them, what happens? It brings frustration. So you find out that in our life, in a conditioned state, we go through three basic experiences born out of our desires. When you want something, you find out that all the necessary vitals in you go for it. Your intelligence, your other forces, they go for it. When you get it, you feel accomplished. But at the time of achieving it, there's an experience. It has no value again. When you don't have it, you want to do anything to get it. But as soon as you get it, the value is reduced. Because it's right in your hands now, you'll be thinking, what is next? So in life, when we want something, we achieve it. Okay, some satisfaction, but it is not the much we want. Now it becomes more complex when you get that thing and you are not satisfied. It's frustrating, isn't it? You want it, you got it, you are not satisfied. It gives frustration, isn't it? Isn't it? Now you got it, you are not satisfied, you lost it. It gives frustration. So the beginning and the end of our desires materially is only fraught with frustrations. All our material desire is going to give us frustrations. So in the end, little intelligence is required because that intelligence is already there with us. Little application of that small intelligence that makes us different from animals. In Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th Canto, Chapter 11, it speaks of ideal society. And in ideal society, it mentions about 30 qualities that anybody should cultivate if he has a legitimate claim of being a human being. 30. If you don't cultivate those 30 qualities, you are an animal. But with some phrase, unfortunate animal. Why? Animals, they hop around, they jump around with four limbs. But you can only do with two of your own limbs, isn't it? Only two. So can you compare the ratio of 2:4? Your advantage is less, isn't it? So you are unfortunate because the animals could do better what you are endeavoring for. That's what makes you unfortunate. But as a human being, you have that naturally given intelligence that enables you to make certain degree of discrimination. To know this will be useful, this will not be useful. It is on the basis of this principle that Rupa Goswami established that Krishna consciousness can be executed on two principles. One is always think of Krishna. That is the do. The don't is never forget Krishna. Isn't it? So if you're always thinking of Krishna, you'll be apt to accept whatever is favorable to make Krishna happy. Anyabila sutta sunyam. Jana kamadi anuvritam. Anukulena Krishna anusilyanam. It must be favorably pleasing to Krishna. You accept it. That is your intelligence. So if we apply that automatically, we find out that we become aligned. In automobiles, in the wheel, they call something alignment and balancing. If your wheels are not balanced and they are not in alignment, you see that when you are driving, the steering will be wobbling, isn't it? Does it give you a comfortable drive? No, it's inconveniencing. So when we are driving materially and we are out of alignment from God, we are not balancing with God, then there's incoherence in our motion. And so intelligence requires, go to there are people who do balancing and alignment. They are in automobile stations. They help you do the balancing, they do the alignment, and if your brake system is good, you can just go at any speed you want on the highway, isn't it? So in the end, this is the small intelligence that we require. But in English adage, it is mentioned, common sense. That little intelligence is common sense. Unfortunately, common sense is not common. Common sense means it's everywhere. But it is not common because it is not commonly applied. But it could be applied. It's not commonly applied. To the degree that we've been arrested by the material energy, to that degree, we are not able to use our common sense. But in the end, Krishna, in his infinite mercy, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is always making provision for his creation. Krishna is a loving God, is a very concerned God, is not agnostic, is not like, who cares what happens? He has special concern for every living entity. And so somewhere in Bhagavad Gita, he mentioned, Te sam evanukam partam aham agnana jantama nasayami atma bhavasto janadipena baswata. To show them special mercy. To show them special mercy, I dwelling in their heart, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. To show special mercy, Krishna intervenes from within the heart because he said, Savascha saham ridi sanivisto mata smriti gyanaponahamcha. I'm situated in everyone's heart. Because I'm there in everyone's heart, I am taking inventory. I know how you feel. I know how you think. I know how you will. But it is only my kind duty that I will fulfill, because I've been doing, fulfilling the desires of the conditioned living entity since time immemorial. It's a continuous business. But in course of executing this also, he takes inventory and says, oh, I've been granting him his desires, but he's suffering. There one write-up by one of the disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Maharaj about the benefits of Ekadashi. And he mentioned how Papurusha was created by God himself to taunt, insinuate, allure, and in the end bring to punishment at the abode of Yamaraj all deviating living entities. So one day, Narayan had visited Yamaraj and he was hearing tumultuous crying of anguish of living entities being tortured. So they were crying. And Narayan felt, what is this cause of this uproar? And Yamaraj was mentioning, it is those entities that by their karmic pattern that has come here and I'm dispensing appropriately what is due them. They are the ones crying. And Narayan felt, wow, this is excruciating. It's heavy. I didn't intend this, but somehow it is happening because I set the ball in motion. Now I have to do something to mitigate it. So when he left the abode of Yamaraj, he enacted from his own body another personnel that will act like a check for the personality of Papurusha. And that is how Ekadashi came about. Now, when Papurusha got to know that there is some authority to checkmate his activities, he went straight to Narayan and complained, what is this, my lord? You gave me this service. I'm sure I'm not doing it badly. If there's any need for improvement, I'm willing to improve. But I just discovered that you have already put a stumbling block in the way of my executing my duties. So what should I now do? Ekadashi is going to obstruct me on every 11th day after the waxing moon and 11th day on the waning moon. 2 days in a month, no business. So he said, don't worry. You are doing excellently well. What I expect of you. It's just that in me, I have this nature of compassion. Simultaneously, I like orderliness, I like thoroughness, I like proper conduct. But there's one extra thing I have that is not with you, who are my workers. You are to the letter what you are supposed to do. But the compassion of the consequence of your action you may not be seen. But I, who is the one who put the machinery in motion, I also go beyond just instructing you to evaluate, which is the completeness of administration. In administration, there is policy formulation, there is policy implementation, and then there is feedback. You have to evaluate. So that, in administration as mentioned, if you are formulating policy, setting policies, the conditions should be flexible. In case it is too harsh, you moderate it. So God's policies are not just orthodox that you must die in course of experiencing it. No. But those who execute because of intensity of their devotion, they don't compromise. So he told him, you don't worry. You just do your duty as you are doing now. Don't stop. But on the 11th day, you have a break. And you find out that that break has so many use for the living entities. In India here, I don't know now, but those days when I was in school here, I know that there are days they call dry days. Dry days. There are certain things you can't get on that day. What happens on dry days? All the beer parlors are closed down. Meat and mutton shops are closed. You can't buy fish, you can't buy meat. And so there's one day of being vegetarian, officially. There's one day of being non-alcoholics, officially. So when people are not alcoholics for one day, what happens? At least for one day, they become sane. Isn't it? Isn't it? So the same thing that in effecting Ekadashi, for one day, people will have some relief. And when they are getting that relief, Papurusha will be feeling insecure. He has to look for somewhere to hide because the personality of Ekadashi will be haunting him to make sure he doesn't penetrate from anywhere. So Vishnu told him on that day, don't worry about your safety. You just do one thing. Because it's Ekadashi and nobody is allowed to take grains of any sort, Ekadashi will be looking for you everywhere. But because she also is mindful not to deviate, she will not go near grains. So you go and hide inside the grains. So 2 days in a month, Papurusha is hiding inside grains. And Ekadashi lets him be. She won't find him. And that is why you find out that on Ekadashi, if perchance you deviate and take grains on that day, natural design of God is to reduce your inclination to sinful tendencies. But when you do that on Ekadashi, it will increase. It will be aggravated. If you eat grains on Ekadashi. And in measuring the weight of breaking Ekadashi, it is mentioned that the weight of the sin of breaking Ekadashi is equivalent to killing one's guru. And you know, in grading sin, the killing of a brahmana is the highest sin. Isn't it? To kill a brahmana is the top chart of grading sin. Next is killing of cow. So guru, if you kill guru, have you not killed Brahmin? So sin is very high. So it is in this line that now, out of compassion, the personality of God had created the Ekadashi day for the benefit of the suffering conditioned living entities in the abode of Yamaraj. But he mentions here also in Bhagavad Gita that to show them mercy, he gives them knowledge. He gives knowledge from within so that they will be able to feel guilty. Because you know why? The secret of committing sin is very simple. If you want to commit sin, simple formula. Somebody was asked, what is the secret of making your money? You want to be a very rich man. He said, first, there are 3 things required. If you want to make money, one is make some plans. Don't worry about what the plan looks like, good or bad, but have a plan. Blueprint. Number 2, kill your conscience. Your conscience, you go and look for acid and destroy it so that you will not feel, supposing I do like this to him, he may feel hot. Or he will not feel hot, or if no, You don't worry about the consequences. Go ahead. And then he said, Ted, you must be the son of a bitch. Down to earth, you don't care what happens. You don't care whose ox is God to achieve what you want. So in the end, he says, if you have this plan, you will hit the headlines. And so when we want to commit sin also, what do? It is the same model we have. The material energy will sufficiently equip you with information, strategies, how to go about it. Isn't it? Because Krishna said, as I'm in the heart, I give knowledge of remembrance, I also give knowledge of forgetfulness. Both come out of knowledge. You forget Krishna. Krishna will just make you forget him completely. Then you have sufficient confidence that what I'm doing is the right thing, I can go ahead and do it. I mean, conscience is gone. And then you don't care of whatever consequence will come. And then you go ahead and you do it. Conversely, if you don't want to involve in sin, you do the opposite. You must have a plan, but the plans are guided based on scriptural codes. Isn't it? 2, you cultivate moral ethics and value. Your value system must be to the mark. And then you are considerate. How will the other person feel? What will be the consequence of my action on the other person? And that's why you find out that devotees who are very thorough, it is not easy for them to do certain things to make money. That's why you find out that exalted brahmanas like Viprasudama, he knows all the scripture, but his failure is he cannot make money. Dronacharya, the greatest of the acharyas, he knows all the equipment, the weapons for warfare, but he does not know how to make money. Will that happen in modern times, where they are pirating technology by the day? Even your CDs are pirated, isn't it? You produce the music now, and then by the time you know it, I don't know if it's still going on in Ulas Naga. I hope nobody is from Ulas Naga here. So technology is pirated by the second. So if Dronacharya was living now, he would not go to beg for a cow. He would not be humiliated. And he would not want to make revenge and misrepresent his position and personality if he was living now. But because the time he was living was very good time, people are moral, they're ethical, and they follow proper conduct. So if you are not materially successful, you are not worried. You think it's okay, it's helping me. You understand? So in the same vein, when you want to follow the ways of God, you have to be thorough. Certain things you never involve in. And so you find out that you may not be getting the volume of money that you need to run your bills. But that is also good for us as devotees, because Krishna made a promise that for those who worship him consistently, without deviation, he reciprocates in one way or two ways. One, what they have already, he will ensure it and preserve it. What they lack is going to bring for them. Isn't it? Is that not what Krishna said in Bhagavad Gita? So what you don't have, you don't really bog yourself so much to think, I must go for it. Because the extra strength, the extra intelligence that you put in to get those things are actually energy, intelligence given by God for you to come close to him and enjoy Ananda Mayo Biasat. You enjoy unlimitedly. That is God's plans for us. But when we don't do this, you find out that we just go through the whole heck of running through the material arrangement of the unfoldment of the senses, their permutations, and the witnessing demigods that are associating with them. And then in the end, you have no excuse to say, oh, nobody was seeing me. When you are committing sin, maybe in the dark place, you think, oh, everywhere is dark. Isn't it? Nobody is seen. But Bhagavatam says, there are so many witnesses around you. The hair on your head is the closest witness, physically. The super soul in the heart is there. Different faculties of you are there, and different parts of your body, different demigods are officiating there. Say, don't know. There's no way you can deny. Isn't it? So for the devotee, you don't have an excuse to deviate. It is only going to be out of certain neglect in your regular conduct, which is why Rupa Goswami mentioned you must be careful of those six things that will destroy your spiritual life. Atyahara, prayasascha, prajalpo, niyamagara, jana sangha chaloliamsha, sadibhakti vinasyati. Overaccumulation, including books also. Over-endeavoring, wasteful talk, unnecessary penance, and then wrong association. All of these put together, I said, they will destroy. He said, but cultivate those six that will be very useful for you. Usaha anisaya diayet. Always be enthusiastic. How will enthusiasm come? How does enthusiasm come? When we all went to Puri, it wasn't like bed of roses. Isn't it? But the enthusiasm never waned. Why? I remember at one point, I was staying in Gambira, right outside, and I was being drenched by rain. But I did not go. Why? There was impetus to carry on. So enthusiasm is enhanced by information. Information. The whole thing about material consciousness and Krishna consciousness is fundamentally based on information processing. We are the type of information we access. Many informations are there on internet today. They can make you, they can mar you. It depends on which you access. Now, when you access those information, what happens? It forms some pattern of consciousness. Information makes your consciousness. So you have material information, material consciousness. Krishna conscious information, Krishna consciousness. And what does it produce? When you have material consciousness, your attitude. You have material approach to things. But conversely, if you are Krishna conscious, you have Krishna conscious attitude. And what enhances your Krishna consciousness? The basic thing that is mentioned, Sravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam. The nine processes of devotional service will help that. Then so many processes of material life also, we enhance material information and then material consciousness. So in the end, your attitude is your behavior. Over time, your behavior is rated as what? Your habit. And you know economics is mentioned, once a habit is formed, it is very difficult to eradicate. Isn't it? Once you have formed a habit pattern, it is difficult to give up. And when it is difficult to give up, over time, in centuries to come, they say it is our culture. Becomes culture. Pattern of behavior in particular location for particular people. Culture. So you have intercultural communication. You have interpersonal communication. Interpersonal relationship. So in Krishna consciousness, our activities are built in such a way that they only enhance Krishna consciousness, not otherwise. So you find out that we are following a culture because the information that is passed in this culture is being from time immemorial, from God himself, and is handed down in disciplic succession, and we are assessing it today. So we are continuing that culture, Krishna conscious culture, that is founded on Vedic culture. And if you look very closely in Vedic culture, it's all about welfare. It's not about destruction. Vedic culture is all about welfare. Your welfare, the welfare in society, the welfare of the less privileged, the welfare of the women who have to be protected, the welfare of children who should be protected, the welfare of the aged in society who are the easily prone casualties when there is war outbreak. Isn't it? That is why you now find in Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna was discussing with Arjun, Arjun was refusing to fight because of the cultural heritage he imbibed. That culture should be for preservation, not for destruction. But in the end, Krishna told him, if there has been acculturation and there are certain infiltrated negative influences, what do you do? What is the need of maintaining a culture that has already been proliferated, destroyed? Same Vedic culture says, to save a family, you will do what? You give massage to everybody. To save a family, you must sacrifice something, one human being. To save a family, you will sacrifice one human being. To save a community, one family will go. To save a nation, one community can go. This is God's formula. So the battle of Kurukshetra was in the same pattern. It is also Vedic culture. There has to be some sacrifice of the unscrupulous elements so that there will be sanity in society. And that is fulfilling the word of Krishna when he said, Paritranaya sadunam vinasayacha duskritam dharma samstapanastaya sambhavami yuge yuge. It's a continuous business. It is the sport of God. And we all have equal responsibility to uphold this dharma, to uphold this culture. But we have to follow the rudiments as they are enjoined in the scripture. Why? If we follow the converse way, we'll only be walking about the dictates of the senses. And you find out that it's mentioned that, the Prabhupada mentioned, that our body is effect of the senses. And the senses are instrument for gratifying desire. And they produce effect. So you see, law of cause and effect. If you follow the material syndrome, cause and there will be effect. So the material senses will produce the subtle body that we are reading now. And aggravated by the influence of the modes of material nature. And Krishna rightly said here, Devihi esa guna mai mama maya duratyaya. It is very difficult to overcome. Why? In our original nature, we don't need to struggle. So this is a creed that we should not imbibe today. In the Christian belief system, there's what they call creed of faith. I believe in God, the Father Almighty, creator of heaven and earth. It's their creed of faith. It strengthens them. So our creed is, Mama Eva Amsa Jivaloke, Jivabhuta Sanatana. All of us, we are Amsas of God. We are Sanatan. So we are closely knitted to God. But because of a little abuse of independence, we misapplied our intelligence. We accommodated unnecessary things. And so our thinking became perverted. In that perverted state, we are pushed to this environment, Devidam. And we are now, he said, Manasastriya Indriyani. The six senses along with the mind, Prakritistani Kashyati. That word Kashyati is very significant. Hard struggle. But our nature is not to struggle. Our nature is just to be subservient to God. And everything will be running smoothly. But when we have perverted thinking, then we have to struggle. And in that struggling stage, what happens? Automatically, we will run through certain experiences that they are not necessary. Because if you look closely, Krishna so designed the system that he personally involved in it. All those living entities that have gotten perverted thinking, he impregnated them. And then they came to the Mahatattva, stayed in Pradhan, in the unmanifested stage, and finally himself entered. He came in with time, walk, most of material nature as Gabudakashaya Vishnu, and then he agitated the Mahatattva with false ego. Agitated. Then this present caused the production of the golden egg, which is the universe. Take note of this. The universe. A poet said, you cannot change the universe, but you can improve on one aspect of the universe. You can't change it. You can improve. And that aspect of the universe that can be improved is you and I. You improve, I improve, we all improve, and then what will happen? You have the golden age of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Isn't it? So, the golden egg was produced, and then Mahavishnu entered into it, and then the Virat Roop was manufactured or manifested. The Virat Roop manufactured, first the mouth came for speech, and then the fire god, the demigod, you see, the sense comes, the demigod who is in charge also manifests along with it. The nostrils manifest, and the wind god also accompanies it. The eyes manifest, and the sun god manifests. The ear, the auditory senses also, and the deity for directions, Digdevtas, they also accompany it. Then the skin, hair, mustache, and beard also manifested, and the accompanying demigods. The herbs and drugs manifested, and the accompanying demigods. The object of procreation also manifested, accompanying demigods. All of these, the hands, the legs, the vein, the blood, the abdomen, fillings, heart, moon, intelligence, accompanied by Lord Brahma. First ego by Lord Shiva. Then consciousness is the end of it all. But you find out that when all of these senses have been manifested, they wanted to wake the origin of the appearance. The senses and the demigods, they want to wake, that is, make the source of the appearance to become active. But in the attempt, they could not achieve it. So what did they do? One after the other, they started running back into the Virat Purusha. The fire god entered. In their chronology, they came and came and came, but none of them could spur the Virat Roop into activity. None of them. All ran through until false ego. No one could agitate or wake him. But when consciousness, it's a consciousness with what? Reason. Consciousness with reasoning entered. The Virat Roop was poured into action. So in the same way, our material entanglement now is like a sleeping state. There is nothing that you do. If you like, take more of any material object of sense, what will happen? It will increase your state of sleep. It will not wake you to normal consciousness. Isn't it? So one becomes perpetually addicted to the things of the senses. But if you want to wake up, he said, it is only when the super soul in the heart stimulates your reasoning, then you realize, what is it that I've been doing? You know, there's one story in the Puranas I mentioned. Okay, so let's leave the story because of time. It's mentioned that in that sleepy state, if the super soul assists, then we wake up. And there is an explanation to that effect in the Lila of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He said that Lord Chaitanya mentioned in the Shikshastakam that the Mahamantra will clear death from our consciousness or the mirror of our mind. Cheto dapana majanam. It will clean the mirror of the mind. Because already, the mirror of the mind has been infested with so many impressions over many, many lifetimes. So when you look in the mirror, you are seeing something else. You are not actually seeing yourself. You are seeing something else. And then, when the mirror is cleansed, the fire of material life is extinguished. And when that fire of material life is removed, our real identity manifests. What is our real identity? Our identity is that we are all Jivera Swarup Ahoy Nitya Krishna Das. We are all eternal servants of Krishna. We are not enjoyers of Krishna. We are his servants. But in our humble situation of being subservient to Krishna, we have our own quota of enjoyment. It's not dry association. It is a reciprocal relationship, symbiotic, not parasitic. Krishna does not use us and dump us. It's like living with a king in the royal palace. Whatever he has, somebody was telling me in Puri, that all those big, big guest houses are built by some rich men. They don't stay in Puri. But the houses are there. And who are those enjoying their houses? The chonkidas. Isn't it? The security men are the ones who are enjoying the palatial mansions. The owners come maybe once in a year, stay for 1 week for picnic, and go away. So you see, when you relate with the king, you also enjoy the resources of the king. So that's the nature of our relation with Krishna. So when our identity is manifest, we become free from Maya, then our intelligence becomes purified and engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. When that engagement is done, automatically, the Supreme Lord appears on the full moon day, Lord Chaitanya. That's how he came, isn't it? You now see that the heart becomes spotless. It becomes spotless, like Gora Chandra. But the material moon has spots on it, isn't it? But the spiritual moon of Lord Chaitanya is spotless. The spotless moon, the material moon has spots. In order to fix the purified mind and the service of the Supreme Lord, one has to worship Lord Gorachandra. Materially passionate or those who want to exhibit intelligence or material advancement worship Lord Brahma. Persons who are in the gross ignorance of identity with the body worship Lord Shiva. Example of these are Hiranyakashipu and Ravana. They worship Lord Brahma or Lord Shiva and they got some benediction. But with all that benediction, you see the style, the expertise with which Nisingadev came, he destroyed without altering any of the benedictions. Not in the daytime, not in the night, not on the land, not in the air, not by this, not by that. All conditions fulfilled. Just like he said in economic theory or in theory, all things being equal. Everything was equal, but Hiranyakashipu died. Isn't it? Same thing with Ravana. All things were equal, but Ravana died. Because they did not apply themselves adequately. So Prahlad and other devotees in the service of Krishna worship the personality of Godhead. And that is what we are being groomed to do. So that we have our eternal, original nature reinstated and we can live forever. That's why Krishna said, one who comes to my abode, he never goes back. You will not. Because you will now see the futility of all those attempts you have made. And we have a very simple process. It's not too cumbersome. It is not too rigorous. Although some people want rigorous process. Simple process. Chanting the name of the Lord. Hearing about God. And remembering him. Simple process. The scriptures. Krishna consciousness is a literary institution. Most people who cannot read and write, they will not enjoy Krishna consciousness because there is so much of nectar that when you dive into it, you will not be able to come out. Isn't it? But even the little they do, chant, the heart will be cleansed. And then somehow, by associating or coming in contact with pure devotees, the seed of devotion will be planted and they can grow. So this is the simple process we have and we follow it very closely, you'll find out that our life will be glorious like the life of Ojamil. Because it's the glories of Ojamil's life that we are enjoying. That's why we are reading this. He was properly trained. He deviated. But by some unimaginable good fortune, he got mercy. And you won't believe, Ojamil now, because of that awakened consciousness, he went to Haridwar and he executed devotional service. And in the same body, the body all became purified. Same body, he went back to the spiritual world. If it was possible for him, it's also possible for all of us. Hare Krishna.